Hey everyone, welcome to another exciting episode of the Scratch a Track podcast presented by the Dude and Grim Show and co-produced by Mr. IVEST. I am the Dude.
And I am Grim. And today we say Hail to the Thief because we're talking about Hail to the Thief by none other than Radiohead.
Radiohead.
Sixth. I always thought this was an interesting one because I felt like you certainly didn't know what to expect. And then they dropped Kid A, and we'll just say for the sake of it, Amnesiac too, not that there wasn't a gap there, but
right.
Then I felt like you really didn't know what was going to come after that. It could kind of go anywhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It definitely could have. And, you know, there were some, you know, they call it the Amnesiac Tour. You know, Tom had some stuff. He sent around some demos to the band and everything. And they went out on tour and, you know, they had rehearsed and everything and kind of performed a bunch of songs live. And now this was back in the day when like LimeWire was a thing.
Oh, and yeah.
I remember just like I was download Radiohead Live. And I came across a bunch of these tracks that I kind of didn't know. And I remember like Punch Up at a Wedding was like one of the first ones.
I do remember that.
And it was like, oh man, this is cool. All right. And you know, so I got a few of those tracks there. But yeah, we had speculated a lot and we just weren't really sure.
Because it was fully into them at this, you know, easily my favorite at that moment, my favorite band.
Oh my God.
Hands down.
Like, yeah, I ate, breathed, slept Radiohead. It was just like was like what I was listening the majority of the time. And, you know, I remember going to the store to pick this up. We were on our lunch break. It came out and we drove to Best Buy to pick it up.
Did they always used to put them out on Tuesdays? Do you remember
maybe
that? I feel like that was like a weird thing where like new albums always used to come out on a Tuesday. And I could be remembering that incorrectly. So maybe if anyone also can remember, go ahead and throw that below because I
like subscribing out below.
But dude, you know, I hadn't listened to this album for a long time. It's not one that I don't have it on vinyl, but after listening to it the past couple of days again, I'm definitely feel like I should pick it up. And
it's a double. It has to be though. It's just too long.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. But kind of like listening to it and looking back at it and then seeing everything that's come, you know, since then, I almost feel like I consider this their most well-rounded album.
I think that's fair. Yeah.
I feel like it takes the best elements
of a lot of things.
Definitely from their previous stuff. If you're, you know, talking about, you know, the band's OK Computer, Kid A and Amnesiac, I really feel like it melds all of it's got guitar, it's got rawness, it's got that, but it's also got a lot of beats in things.
Yeah.
And I just think they do a real good job of like putting that all together. You got a lot of piano, some softer stuff and everything. True. Like they do a really good job of that.
True. I would absolutely agree. And that's why I don't know. I thought it was not that we're getting into the tracks necessarily, but I just thought 2 + 2 = 5 was a really good way to start it because you kind of knew that because you have the guitar come in, but there's also the drums sound kind of like an electric beat more than
absolutely,
you know?
Yeah.
So that, I don't know. I think that was just sort of an interesting thing. Cause you're kind of like, huh? I can't imagine anybody, I doubt there were a lot of fans at that point that had the reaction of, oh, I don't like where this is going.
No. It's
even if it's not your favorite album of theirs, just the first time you hear it.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. You know, because I know we deal with that with some bands where, man, you just kind of don't like the direction they're going. And I remember, you know, when we heard this, it was like, oh, okay, sweet. And I think we were like, dude, Kid A and Amnesiac are just beautiful pieces of work, man. I love them. But when I kind of heard, you know, when there were interviews and people were kind of saying, oh, this one, you know, they're bringing, the, you know, it wasn't, you know, guitar and rock centered, but they're like bringing it back more, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was going to be there. I was like, okay, I'm good with that. You know,
absolutely.
Like that's, I'm, you know, that works for me.
Cause that was kind of more, I mean, really, that was kind of what I think a lot of people really related to with OK Computer, is it had that familiarity about what was driving the song, but what was going on around it was something totally different.
Pretty much. Yep.
But I a personal memory of when this came out. So the 9th of June, 2003. Now, if I'm not mistaken, that summer we would have been in D3 and also had E1, in which we were recording a little album called More Information. And I remember it was the first time having this dedicated space to record, and I thought everything was like sounding awesome. And then like this came out and you heard it and you're like, oh my God, dude, it sounds like somebody shitting in a tin can. You know, like this sounds so good.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, this album, I mean, you would expect it to, but man.
Of course.
It sounds really good.
But it's just like further reinforced, you know, when something comes out and you just hear just how nice it sounds. Now, one thing that kind of brings me to is I didn't realize that they came and recorded this in L.A. Mm-hmm. And if you look at Ocean Wave Studios, Ocean Wave Studios, where they recorded it. It is a very famous studio with like a room, like their large room that they have that people record in. Let me put it to you like this. There are specific plugins made for Pro Tools that the only purpose of this plugin is to emulate the sound of the specific room in Ocean Way Studios. That's, like it is like its own sort of sound.
That's a hell of a room.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a hell of a room.
So,
I knew it was done in LA. I remember that. And I remember they were like, they kind of had it planned and scheduled, and dude, they did it like the majority of it over a 2 week period. But even before they left, like they were asking themselves, like, wait, why are we going to fly halfway around the world to do this? But I think they said it was like a really great experience, and you know, they worked really hard at it. And man, I'll tell you what, you know, it's probably not such a bad thing. It's like, man, you get away from all the noise, you get away from home, right?
And go to excessive noise where you're going, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
but it's just different.
It's
just different.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a little different. You know, but yeah, I mean, they said they pretty much did a track a day, and that they wanted to capture, and I think they performed a lot of the songs like live.
They said they focused more on that than overdubs and layer, you know. Which is cool.
And I think how they kind of said they wanted to spend less time looking at computers and in grids, and instead like integrating the computers like into the performances and stuff,
which is pretty sweet.
It's pretty badass.
But dude, you look at enough time. I mean, any like you editing video. I mean, dude, you get timelined out, man.
Dude, so many timelines. Oh. Hummina.
Yeah. Makes you want to go to the Tesseract, man, where you see time in all dimensions at once.
That would work. But yeah, I mean, Thom Yorke, you know, they even said like with a lot of his lyrics, like he didn't have time to like rewrite stuff or anything. And, you know, we've heard a lot of artists do this. The Stones do this. He's done this previous where, you know, cutting up words and phrases and things and piecing them together randomly and whatnot. And, you know, but he also took... He was a pretty new father at that point, and he took like a bunch of phrases like from fairy tales and folklore and things like that. And, you know, looking at, you know, today was like probably one of the first days where I actually sat down and really looked at the lyrics a little more in depth. And I know he said he didn't really want to make like a political album or whatever, but man, there's a lot of there's a lot of stuff you could take away from this one. And
just remember what title. I mean, the significance of the title alone is
absolutely. I mean, yes. that, and what was this? Yeah, 2003. I mean, dude, we're less than, I mean, this came out, so this is June of 2003.
This is,
so
this like is the war than, on terror and, you know.
Yeah, war on terror. Dude, this is, yeah,
Homeland less than 2 security. Years. I guess he probably wouldn't have experienced that the same way. But if they flow into the U.S., they would.
Yeah, yeah. But, dude, I mean, it affected places more than, you know,
yeah, just that's here true. And
everything.
That's
so true. But it sounds like, dude, this was just like a really overall positive and pleasant experience. Like even Ed O'Brien said that, you know, this was the first album that at the end of recording it, they didn't want to just like kill each other at the end. Because I think they went, I mean, I think they went about it the right way. They had a bunch of songs that they could kind of play and work through. They went, they took them on tour and they were in good enough shape where they, hey, we're going to play them live.
Yeah. That, we're gonna that go already the is a win. Them. Yeah.
Right.
Already I mean, dude, a win.
I can only imagine how frustrating. It's like, hey, we don't really know what we're going to do next. We're going to all, you know, go into this studio. We'll all be in the same small space together. And we're just going to try to come up with shit. And like, you know, let's take bets on who gets pissed off first, right? Like, I mean, that just doesn't sound like a very constructive way.
No,
to create stuff. So
no, it does not. And especially if you go in with nothing in mind, it's one thing. Even if one person has something you can build from, you know. But
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Now, the cover I did not know about. Until
dude, that reading was cool, about, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's a map of what is it?
Hollywood.
Hollywood. Yeah,
the roadside. Yeah. The roadmap of Hollywood, essentially.
And then all the phrases are stuff that they saw on signs
and advertisements, and everything. Because you know, I had always looked at it, and I never assumed it was like anything. I mean, it looked like it could be something, right? But I never assumed that. Oh, that's like, you know. It's downtown L.A. or
and
know,
see the now,
Los Angeles area.
Was there, because I can't remember, did this have some sort of, I feel like this one had like a fold or something.
We had a special edition. Of course. We both got it. Yeah. And yeah, of course, I don't have it here. But yeah, I remember it being like
something.
It was kind of like it wasn't like a disc. It was longer.
Yes.
It was like a little booklet. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I couldn't tell you what was inside it or anything, man.
I know. And see, that's one thing I'm like, I think for a while, a lot of people got away from doing like proper liner notes. It was just like credits basically. And then weird artwork. And that may have been the case with this one, but I don't know. It's
it probably had the lyrics in it and pictures.
Oh
and
yeah. Shit, but it'd probably, be interesting if they, you know, said like, this is what the cover is. And this person did it.
Yeah. Right.
You know, I don't know.
Well, you know, I had mentioned to you that, you know, a lot of the live songs before it was coming out, you know, I downloaded like on LimeWire, and I think Napster had been shut down at this point, but I had LimeWire and stuff. And, but 10 weeks before
the
album was supposed to be released, this up.
Yeah.
You know, it got leaked, you know, and the thing that they were most frustrated about is that what got leaked was like unfinished material. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, and I can understand that. It's like, well, awesome. So you're leaking all, you know, the album, all these people are going to hear songs that aren't finished. They're not, you know, they're not mixed right. And, you know, that's there. They're like, man, we don't want people to hear our music that way. This isn't how it was meant to be. So, that seemed to be one of the big things for him.
I know. I can kind of go both ways on that, honestly, because there's part of me I'm like, I probably would have. I don't remember that, honestly. I don't. I remember hearing like the live bits. But I don't remember hearing.
Yeah, I didn't download it. I don't think I had.
Yeah.
And I was usually kind of like on top of that.
Yeah.
Shit. I didn't have that.
Yeah.
Well, shall we get into scratching some tracks?
Yeah.
Talking some tracks and then scratching? Yeah.
Yeah. Talking and scratching.
Want to do some math here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't this come from like 1984 or something?
Yeah, that's what they said.
Yeah, because like
some sort of a phrase or some kind of concept or idea in it. But I haven't read 1984 or what? Do you even watch the movie? So I can't 100% speak to that.
Yeah. I mean, I know roughly what it's about, so that makes sense. And maybe it's basically symbolic, like if the regime beats people down enough that they would actually believe, and you know what I mean?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Well, dude, I know. I mean, this, especially when we, I mean, it's with every album, but especially when it comes to a Radiohead album, how are they going to start it?
Oh, I love it. Sound it's like, noise,
you know, yeah,
and some talking. Yeah, there's a little.
It's them plugging in. It's yeah. Like, burr, 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 and then it's ding, and then.
Yeah, but the way it's cool. It's sort of like how you would imagine a real impromptu performance. Like they just kind of get going.
Well, it kind of. I mean, they said it was basically they refinished the song within 2 hours. This was like their studio test song.
Yeah,
that they did. It's like they showed up and like, well, hey, let's play this one first. It's kind of like the test to just see how everything feels and sounds and whatnot. And this is what they came up with.
Hell of a test.
Yeah, we're good.
Yeah,
move on. But yeah, dude, I mean, it's again, you read the lyrics, it's very, very bleak.
Dystopian.
You know, it's the devil's way now. Yeah, there's no way out. You can scream and you can shout. It's too late now because you've not been paying attention. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, man. But I've always really loved this song because it just slowly builds up.
Oh,
man.
It's
a great song to see live too. It's so good.
I know. I can't remember a specific instance, but I'm pretty sure I have in the amount of times I've seen them.
I remember
a version of the gloaming that was just disgusting. And I think that was at Lollapalooza. So I think you would have been there too. 2007, like when In Rainbows came out.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, that was it.
It was worth it.
It was worth it. So, but we also saw them at Cuyahoga Falls on this tour. And at that show, well, you saw them at Cuyahoga Falls. I saw them in Chicago. But yes, I believe they opened up with this, the second track, which is Sit Down, Stand Up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I know we had always been you're like, oh man, what song are they going to open with? Oh. Just like, what song are you going to, you know? And we had all pretty much put our money because, you know, I think we'd been looking at set lists and I think they'd pretty much been opening up with They're There. I think that was the one they'd really been opening all their shows up with. So I was like, oh yeah, it's They're There. And then they start playing this and it was like, oh, badass, mm-hmm. right? And then, dude, at the end with the raindrops, man, and it's
pretty.
Just like green, like laser lights shooting down. It was just like, whoa.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're on, but it probably looks pretty cool. yeah, man, dude, I liked this song, but when I saw it live and them do that, I was like, it took it to the next level for me.
Yeah.
It really did.
And
it really did.
I think this one, and I want to say I read something where they said they hadn't really spoke about it or taken a stab at anything, but I think this one's about religion.
Sit down, stand up.
I think about Catholic Church, man. That's pretty much it.
I can see that. Yeah, I could definitely see
that. Yeah.
It's what you do.
Yeah.
Now, Sail to the Moon. So, first off, dude, you know, all these opening tracks, very different, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they're very different from each other. And, you know, we go to Sail to the Moon, which is like this, you know, piano-driven song, man. I guess he wrote the lyrics like in 5 minutes and pretty much wrote it for his son, Noah. And once I like read the lyrics after learning that, I was like, oh, okay, I can see what a bunch of this means.
Yeah. Now, I have to say recently, and I wasn't even doing research for this podcast, but I came upon a video on YouTube and it said, is this Radiohead's most difficult song? That was just the title of it. Didn't reference a song.
Okay.
And so, of course, I'm like,
clickbait for you.
Yeah, I want to see what this is. And then, of course, immediately it says it's Sail of the Moon. And I'm like, huh, that's not what I would have guessed. But please elaborate, you know, because they're like breaking it down musically.
Yeah.
And it doesn't sound like it would be the most complicated song, but when you actually, when they broke it down musically and what they're doing, there's like this, the intro, his phrasing, it's not consistent. He repeats it like, he goes like five times, he plays, and then four times, and then three times. Okay. So the band, like, it's not consistent until it gets started. And then once it gets started, it's a little more consistent. But when he talks about that little break where, you know, I'll suck the moon, yeah, like that, that is technically like not in the same time signature as the rest of the song. But to me, it sounds like it, yeah, it completely works. But I would also recommend people watch that video, because it's just, it's an interesting breakdown of a song that, like, I think largely gets sort of looked over.
Sure. Interesting. Yeah. Because, I mean, for me, who doesn't have that sort of musical, I guess, training and background, I listen to it and it just seems like a very simple, you know, piano song. Dude, it reminds me, actually, one song it really reminds me of Radiohead's is like You and Who's Army. Which is also piano based, but that guitar and the tone of kind of the guitar and how it just has these simple, you know, kind of licks that they kind of play throughout the song and everything.
Yeah.
Really just, you know, kind of reminded me of that.
I can see that.
So we go to another even different song with Backdrifts. Dude,
I don't know.
It's crazy, man.
It might be my favorite one on the album. Because the production value, I mean, to like listen to it in headphones is
it's like this rotating pulse, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it's weird, man.
I would actually like to know what is doing that, and they're not very. Like, I'm the type of person where if I was in a band and made some sweet album with all these cool sounds, I would, like, list the instruments. I'm that sort of a person. But they don't. They're just, like, guitar, synth, words. You know, only a few of them, you know, and that was, like, the Andes Martineau, that thing that Greenwood plays that has, like, a ring that slides on a string. You know, you've seen it in concert and stuff enough where it's somewhat recognizable. But anyways.
Like, dude, it's such a cool part. Like when they do that. And I love then later towards the end of the song when the piano comes in again.
Oh, man.
Right. Like, dude, my only complaint, I kind of wish that piano part was louder. I wish it was like more prominent. I really do. Cause it sounds so good, man.
I know,
it just sounds really good. And every time I'm just like, man, I just kind of want to hear more
of that. Yeah.
I do. It's more of a good thing. Well, then we go to sleep, which is another, you know, we're getting back to some, you know, some heavy guitar here. Right.
When's the last time you heard them play an acoustic guitar before this?
How to Disappear. I'm trying to think Knives Out. Knives Out on Amnesiac. But, you know, they really got away from me. It's very, you know.
Yeah, you heard it more, I feel like, on OK Computer.
Well, okay.
In any one album. It's a nice change, I think, because it's a good riff. And one of the guys, I think, had said that just hearing the guitar riff by itself reminded him kind of like an English folk song.
Totally. I could definitely see that, man.
But they kind of make it so it has a little bit of an edge to it.
Definitely, man. This song, yeah, it has an edge to it. It's got some swagger, like even the way he kind of sings it and everything.
Over my dead body.
Over my dead body. Dude, it was even funny, man. So I was listening to it upstairs earlier today when I was writing my notes and stuff. And my mom heard it. She was like, oh, that sounds really nice. Like she liked it. I was like, well, you know, this is probably one of their more accessible songs. Yeah. You know, there's some that you may not like as much. But dude, this is just it's a good freaking rock song.
Yeah.
You know, it just is, man. And then, you know, when you got the, you know, the guitar comes in with the screeches and then Johnny Greenwood plays this, you know, yeah. like his weird, like, I don't know, you call it a, I guess you can call it a solo.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, I'm going to make some weird, shitty, crazy noises.
Kind of like an English Tom Morello, you know, just
or like Neil Young.
Yeah.
Like, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's funny. They need to make a meme of that. Johnny Greenwood plus Neil yeah. Young equals Tom or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, six. Yeah, where I end and you begin, things kind of take a little bit of a darker turn.
Dude, the bass, man. Like, I mean, I imagine that's the bass Colin gets yeah. his time to shine. Dude, very dark feel. And even Phil Selway.
Yeah, really, I was just going to say the drum part, I think the repetitiveness, yeah. but the pattern itself is just really
freaking sweet, dude. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's,
dude, dinosaurs roam the earth.
Is this the second or third time that's come up?
I think it's the second. Yeah, it's the second.
So it was Kid A and then this one.
Kid A and then this one. Yeah. I can't remember if he's talked about it since then.
I hope so, because
he's at least thought about it.
Yeah, because I kind of like, you're just like, if they were to put out another one, the first time I'd listen to it, I'd be thinking, when is it coming? Like, what song is it gonna be a dinosaur reference?
It's gonna be the just name of the next album if they want to, probably. Yeah. Yeah, you know. This is one of those songs where I feel like by the end, the song layers slowly build throughout the song. And at least for me as a listener, sometimes I don't realize it until like it's like kind of towards the end. And I'm like, there's a lot of shit going on here.
Yeah, it just kind of creeps in.
Yeah, it really does. I thought this song is, you know, for just kind of starting off with like pretty much, you know, bass and drums, but moving along, it keeps a good pace and everything. But you know,
yeah, and so it as I'm looking at the track list and even listening to it again, one thing I forgot to comment on earlier that I do want to bring up is it does feel like one of their longer albums, and I think I don't know if it was. What's his name that produces them? Nigel Godrich. I don't know if it was Godrich or one of the guys in the band, or maybe both, but I think there's been more than one person involved in it who is like, I feel like they could have trimmed a couple songs off.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. And I think like they said something about Tom York or something, making a playlist version of it that like omitted several songs.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Well, that's cool, man. That's funny. Well,
they were not ones that I would have wanted to omit. That I will tell you.
Well, it's funny, man, because we've talked about that a little bit with Nine Inch Nails, The Fragile, how there was sort of like different track orders. Mm-hmm. And I forget the name of the producer who helped him out with kind of putting things in order, but who essentially like handed Trent Reznor a disc and was like, if you really want to be ballsy, like just put this out. And it was like a consolidated disc of like all those songs on The Fragile. And it's like, oh man. So it's like always fun to speculate. Like, I wonder what was on that, yeah. man. Like in what order and all, you know what I mean? Like, so it's fun to make
that. And with this one, I think you could have played around with that, because I think that's one thing that the band said is they weren't, I don't want to say like totally had, like, I think all the people had different ideas about what order these could have went in. And I can see why. Just
yeah,
not that I have sure. an issue with the order, but I mean, there aren't those critical transitions where it's like that just
no.
has to go into the next song.
Yeah. It's not as, I don't think of this album as religiously as I do like Kid A or OK Computer.
Yeah. You can't mess with the order of those that just kind yeah. of exists how it's supposed to be. But this one, yeah. there's I think you could make arguments for different things.
Definitely. Definitely. Well, here we go, Grim. We suck young blood. Really slowing things down here.
Yes. Yeah, I like the even the clap sounds slow.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like they're almost like off.
I know. Well, like, I think that's the point. I think it's like, I think you want it a little sloppy. So it's like you probably have several people in a large room in like, you know. Yeah, I think that's what you, it's like a piano or something that's like slightly detuned, but it works, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, dude, to me, this song just, it has a very eerie, like unsettling. I think that's probably the best way to say it. Because I mean, not just what he's singing about, the instrumentation, like I think this is the weirdest song on the album.
Yeah.
Like, it is weird.
Now,
like in the gloaming, and let me tell you, the gloaming is weird.
Yeah. But this like, one, this one is interesting. Now, I don't know if it was on one of those early live versions of some of the stuff that you had, or if it was on, because they put out like some, a couple times since, I think they've put out like some live, actual live releases, like they put them out. They're not bootlegged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's on one of those two things where there's a version of this song. And in the beginning, Tom York says, this song is about Hollywood.
Oh,
remember that? Yeah,
no, that was, so that I believe was from, it's really sad that I know this shit. I believe that was from, they did the show in Toronto and he was like, I think he was like announcing like, I know he did this for a bunch, like where he's like, this song is brought to you by blah blah blah
or something. Okay.
But maybe not. Maybe this one was part of that. I want to say they did the tour in Spain and Portugal, I believe.
Yeah.
For these demo songs. But dude, I have that track somewhere.
I know, I remember hearing that, and it makes sense. I mean, just with like the title of the song and the subject matter.
Yep.
I mean, we want the sweet meat.
Hollywood, but yes, Hollywood, the sweet meat.
Yeah, that's what he says. It's weird, but it makes sense for Hollywood. I mean, and obviously in the past several years, there's been several things that have come out that would really solidify that as a truth. So
a lot of Kevin Spacey fans.
Oh, not even that. I mean, that too, but... Anyways, dude, okay, the gloaming. Now, it tripped me out when I read about this, and they obviously I've seen them do it, so you know that's, but the end part, that wasn't super computerized, that they had like something, and I wonder if it was one of those, the pedal's called a bit crusher, but it basically like takes the signal and it digitizes it, and then it just destroys that digital signal. It would bring it down from like whatever it's at to like 8 bits or like less, so that it just like really destroys it. But dude, the Nintendo part at the end is the finishing move, dude. It's so nasty.
So finishing.
And one thing, it's interesting to me, like, so this starts with that sort of the bass, and then I couldn't call it like you'd think of it being placed almost like a snare hit, but it's not like a snare hit. But then you get this idea in your head as you're listening to the beginning what the pattern is, and then it totally fucks you up once those come just in,
you figure it out.
because it's on it, like the ones in a different place than you thought it was when you just hear the original two parts making this beat. That always struck me about this is that like it surprises you once the whole thing picks up.
See, man, you know, like here's the thing, like all of that, everything you said is way over my head, but I don't know, or at least I don't hear about a lot of other bands doing stuff like this.
Yeah.
Like doing those things, like, you know, making those adjustments, like kind of teasing, having things be a little more off, or like in the intentional sort of like, hey, almost like you're like teasing or messing, you know what I mean?
And they don't change anything. That's what's interesting about it. It's just that, like, at least for me, as I hear the very beginning, my mind is forming a pattern, and I think I understand what that pattern is, but it's like there was a possibility that you didn't even consider until you hear the other things come in, and then you understand how it all fits together. It's together. I've always really liked that, because even every time I listen to it now, it always still throws you, because it's,
you have to like catch you. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting, man. Yeah.
So next time you listen to it, really explore the space.
Let's explore some space over there with "They're There." Now, this is the big single, right?
Uh-huh.
The first single. Like, this was, and this was actually, I mean, it was strategic. Like, this was released before. It was like they did something that they hadn't done for a very long time. I was like, hey, we're going to release a single like a couple weeks or a certain time before the album comes out. It's going to be accompanied with a music video. And like they did like the thing.
It was right? like their hype sticker. Yeah.
It was their hype sticker.
Yeah. It's a fine song. I like the song. I don't think I would scratch the song. But I don't understand why this one, and they seem to think, because I think I read in here that like it was kind of difficult to record or something, and like Tom York almost like visibly wept when they were done, because they finally got like this perfect take of it. And I'm just like, I mean, I don't get it. Like, it's a good song, but
yeah.
I would think that'd be like what you say when you really nailed Paranoid Android and you're like, my God, that's it. You know?
Finally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think we look at this song too, though, is that it's more of a straightforward rock song. There's transitions, but not like craziness. They're not doing some of the things that you just talked about, like within the gloaming, like is, you know, like
a lot of times
it's
a lot of,
yeah. Lot. Yeah. You know, but yeah, I mean, I think they wanted to put out like a straightforward rock song. And it was interesting because when this song kind of came out, you know, they had been built up, you know, over the years. And again, us being in college during this time, you know, you're around a lot of college kids that are listening to music and downloading shit. And it's a little bit different time than it is now. Hopefully
legally.
I'm sure it was all legal. But you know, you had people doing that, and people like, there were like, oh man, like especially for us, we were Radiohead fans. So I was like, oh yeah, you know, you're a Radiohead fan. But it was like, they came out with a song that almost like non-Radiohead fans would like,
mm-hmm.
right? And so, but again, to me, I don't equate this in the same light or anything at all the way fans reacted to Modest Mouse when they put out Good News for People Who Love Bad News and Float On came out. I felt like that had a lot more backlash. This still had enough like hardcore Radiohead fingerprint.
I don't think people hated it or anything. I certainly didn't. No. But I was just I was like, all right, well, I certainly want to hear that. One thing I will comment on it that I think is real nice is the guitar tone is just superb. It's just thick and crunchy. It's
really nice.
Pretty sure that had to be like an old hollow body through a tube amp. Just real fuzzy.
Tasty.
Yeah.
Tasty. Tasty. Well, if you won't, I will, Graham.
I will.
Are you going? You want me to talk about it?
What were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say, dude, I really like the song. I think it's very, almost in a way, it's kind of like gentle. I didn't know what it was about. It's very intense what it is about. Mm-hmm. But Tom said that he said it was the angriest song he had written. I was very surprised to hear that, because he's kind of gone through some things that you think, you know, I don't know. I would just be like, oh, this is the angriest song you've written.
I understood. Yeah, I agree. One thing that I read that I found was rather interesting was, this was not the first stab at this song.
Yeah, they tried.
Yeah, they had tried to do it before, but it was too like glitchy, or not glitchy, but like electronic-y and gimmicky or something. And I think it's kind of cool how they went back to what they did for this. And it's just very much, I think, him and his guitar. Kind of interesting that he didn't choose. Yeah, I would have chose a classical, honestly, but I like that he's just playing an electric guitar.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Well, I mean, is it him? Is it Johnny playing?
Well, whoever. No. I mean, I'm sure the conversation had to happen of like, what kind of guitar would you play with this? And a lot of people would naturally think an acoustic guitar because it has that sort of just like a singer-songwriter sort of vibe to it. And I just think the electric was an interesting choice.
So here's the deal. There's an alternative version of the song that is out there. And it's actually included. Yeah. And it's actually included on, I have the Go to Sleep single on vinyl.
Do you really?
It's the alternative version is the B-side. And now I have not listened to that in probably.
Oh, just been a while. Years. Okay.
But I've downloaded. Well, I have two versions in my music, and they're both. What do you call it? They're both I Will alternate, and they're both different than what's on the album. So I don't really know which one is the alternate. But the one that sounds way more alternate, actually, it has drums in it, like, and it has like a little, almost like a jazzy drum beat behind it. And I think he might play it with an acoustic. I'm not 100% sure. And the song's a little more upbeat. It's not as subdued as kind of like this version it's of
very
it.
Very so, dude. Yeah.
Very dude. Anyways, so dude, this song, we do have a transition here in this song.
You're right.
I believe the only real transition.
And it's, album? Yeah, maybe. It is. And it is and really,
it's kind of nice.
Like you can't,
'cause you get that.
Yeah. You right? can't scratch. I Will, even if it's not your favorite, just because of the way it goes into Punch Drunk at a Wedding. I agree.
And dude, I call it Punch Drunk because of Punch Drunk Love.
Yeah.
Punch Up at a Wedding was.
That was the first one I heard because that was one of those live ones you got.
Yep. Yeah. It was one of the.
And I remember and we like, I'm into this. Like,
all right. Yeah. That sounds great. Let's. Yeah. Yes, please. Yeah, man. It's a good song. It's funky.
I really feel like I always liked that version even better than the one I put on the album. I did too.
Yep. Yep. I definitely liked that version better. Just like Up on a Ladder.
Oh, yeah. Remember Up on a Ladder?
The mm-hmm. Like, yeah, that one's a lot better than the one that's on the album. But yes, I remember liking something about this Punch Up, the live Punch
what
Up
album at a wedding. Is that on In Rainbows?
It's on disc two.
That's what I was going to say. I yep. thought so. Dude. Yeah.
And you got that on vinyl?
I have it. It's all together, but the only thing that is on vinyl is just a 2-album 45 of the actual album.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh man.
I know, cuz the second one's great. Like I would actually get that. Sweet. Yeah.
It's like their Past Masters volume 2.
Dude, Last Flowers of the Hospital. 4-minute warning, cousin.
So many good tracks. But dude, I mean, even the lyrics of this song, I mean, I just, this song has some attitude, some swagger, you know, I don't know why you bother. Nothing's ever good enough to you. You know, I was there. It wasn't like that. Mm-hmm. You've come here just to start a fight. Like, even says, dude, one line, dude, instead of a bull in a china shop, he says a bully in a china shop.
Like, oh, that's like, oh, funny. That's
kind of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Myxomatosis. I know this is a fan favorite, not my favorite, honestly.
Really? Really?
Yeah, it's almost too frantic.
Man.
But the bass, I would actually love to know how in the absolute shit they got that tone.
I mean, is that mixed with some like synth and stuff too, or like what? I mean,
I'm wondering if somehow they had the bass go into something that made like a controlled voltage input so that like the notes that you were playing on the bass became what the synth also generated. Cause it's, dude,
I've never heard anything sound that fuzzy before. Like that is, it's insane. And
I know. And it's almost like it is and it isn't, because fuzz by its nature is a square wave, which does not actually exist in nature. So it has that element, but it also has like a real large, wide sort of like, like, you know, not square wave sound. Cause I feel like the lowness that it generates would be, that would be tough, but it is unlike anything I've ever heard.
Yeah, dude. And I think that's why I like it so much. Dude, one of the lines, dude, and I just picked up on this today. He says, yeah, no one likes a smart ass, but we all like stars.
That is pretty good.
That is pretty cool, right?
I do also like the alternate title of this that I thought would go really well, which is Judge, Jury, and Executioner. You know how all the songs have like alternate titles? Yeah. Yeah. This one really like kind of sticks with me.
Yeah. Track number 13.
Scatterbrain. Do you know that both these last two have the exact same length of time?
Interesting.
That is weird.
I did not know that.
I didn't either. Anyways.
Anyways, Scatterbrain. I know you and I had never been like crazy about this song. Like
but there was one day it clicked for me. There is a time where this would have been my obvious scratch, no question.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think I don't think it would be at this point.
Okay. Cause what was it that, I don't know, clicked? Cause still hasn't clicked for me.
Like the part where they actually, I like the sort of the change in, I don't know, I wouldn't say modal, but like it kind of goes to more of a major sounding part when they actually say the word scatterbrain, and I don't know, I just, there's something about that change. It's subtle, but it hit me at one point, and yeah, still
I do know what you're talking about. Still I can understand. I can understand why you'd like that, because there is that. It is very subtle, but there is kind of a change,
and I like how. I don't know if they're doing it with like a pedal or something, but as he's singing Scatterbrain, like they get that, you know, they kind of like screw with the delay pedal a little bit and just,
yeah.
I like some of that funny, because again, pretty subtle too, but it works.
Yeah. Who thinks to do this shit?
I think like it's like this album's The Tourist.
Oh, yeah. Johnny's Pride and Joy. well, then we end the album with A Wolf at the Door, and this song is a trippy song, dude. Does it remind you a little bit of Koyaanisqatsi too?
Oh yeah, because it's all arpeggio.
I'm just like, oh wow,
yeah. He's like, did you guys, did Philip Glass co-write this?
But dude, I kind of like how he just, the way he sings it, he kind of like free flows. He's like, he's almost like he's rapping a little bit or something.
You know? Yeah.
Wakey, rise and shine off again, on again. On
yeah. Again. And I, you just sang a different song's lyrics.
Sang a different song. Yeah, I know. I don't know why that was in my head.
No, but it actually could work. I think that's another mashup that needs to happen.
I think it did. Yeah. Fuck, what song is that? That's Faust Arp.
Yeah. Isn't that it? Yeah. I didn't read those. Yep. Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah,
I see. But I know this was one. Honestly, again, this was not my favorite when I first heard it, and it's another one I kind of warmed up to over a little bit of time. But I just, it was just so different than anything I guess I would have expected at that time from them. But that's good. But sometimes when you're like, you know, when you're what you would consider a super fan or something, you think that you have a better idea of what it should sound like than they do, which is not right.
No, it's not. But I mean, all of these songs are just so different from each other.
They are.
Like they really are.
But you have to admit, some of them have a very obvious Radiohead stamp on them. And this, to me, just wasn't one of those, you know?
I still like it now.
I mean...
Yeah. I can understand why you would say that, for sure.
And I'll never see him again if I squeal to the cops.
That's
such a funny line. It's really dark, but it's...
Well, dude, it's funny because that's like in every show or movie where there's like a kidnapping. Yeah. It's like, oh, if you go to the police, like, yeah, you know, no police, whatever. All right. Well, what's your favorite track?
I still think after all this time, I got to go with Backdrifts.
Backdrifts.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's tough for me, man. I'd probably go with 2+2. Or I just like the more rock and roll stuff, man.
Totally.
Go to sleep, 2+2, or go to sleep. But again,
we suck young blood. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to me, this album is, again, it's so well rounded that a lot of songs don't stand out to me like maybe some of their other songs.
I understand
songs,
what you mean.
Like, I think this album is it's different as it is. The quality of the songs and the musicianship and everything is just, it's very consistent. It's just a really, really good album, man. Yep. It is. So, all right, Scratch Away, My Brother.
Now, there's a reason why I don't like this, but musically, it's the one that I could live without. And that is Where I End and You Begin.
Ooh.
Reason being, it just, to me, I think a lot of people would say, well, why wouldn't you scratch We Suck Young Blood? Because that one is just weird, and it adds just a very odd element to the album that I like. But Where I End and You Begin, to me, is, I like it. I mean, come on. But it's really smooth, and now the only problem is then you're missing, like, the connection of the dinosaurs. And dinosaurs, I realize,
room in the earth.
Maybe if I could just get it to scratch, like, after that's said, so I could at least hear it up to there, that would be good.
I don't know. Isn't it towards the end? I'm not really sure. I don't remember.
You're on the
team. Yeah, I mean, I could see why you would do that. You know, it's like,
I feel like it's kind of predictable almost.
Yeah. It's definitely not as, I feel like it is consistent and probably not as maybe unique as some of the other songs. I think maybe that's the way I'd say it, but you know, Colin really gets his time to shine, man.
He does.
He doesn't, dude. He needs his moments. Okay, he really does.
I know.
So, anyways,
you're on.
I mean,
team.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's between two songs. Gosh,
can only pick the Highlander, man. There can only be one.
You know what, dude? Yeah, I'm going with Scatterbrain. It was between that and Suck Young Blood, but you talked me into Suck Young Blood. Just by saying it's just so weird.
And the claps, because you just want to... The thing that I like about the claps is, like, the rest of the song doesn't sound like it's in a large room. It sounds very contained and like a really good recording should sound. But when those claps come in, it's like you don't hear the sound of the room until the claps hit. And that's a weird sort of thing that I like.
That makes sense.
Anyways.
It's like a delay on the space.
Sure.
It's a delay on
the space. It's that ocean way room. It's got to be. They're in, there's like, delay. They're all like in a corner.
It's probably going to sound just like this when I do it.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, we got to do it at the same time. So you get the.
Okay, let's do it. One.
Hi-ya.
Two.
Three. See, that was perfect. That was perfect.
It was not
at all. Editing could fix that. With that,
don't use that as your marker, okay?
No, I'm gonna go with the countdown. For those of you at home, we have to count down.
I think that wraps it up here, Graham, right?
Yeah, scratches it up.
Ooh, scratches it up. All right, everyone, thanks for watching. Give us a like and subscribe. We've done what? OK Computer, Kid A,
like, subscribe, and comment
in Rainbows. And we've probably done some other. I think we even did like a where do you start with Radiohead episode as well. So if you're curious on those thoughts, definitely check them out because they're available. And we got a whole bunch of other stuff too. So until next time, everyone, thanks for watching. It's time to go. TD and G Show.
Scratch a Track is produced by the Dude and Grim. Additional music provided by Moore and the Timms. Copyright 2023. The Dude and Grim Show.